Began Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 18, given in Bombay, India.
The first question. You said last night that modern man has become inauthentic in expressing anger, violence, etc. We see that in India, students and the younger generation are less violent in their emotional expressions than our Western youth. Does this mean that Western youth is becoming more authentic? Our permissiveness in expressions in sex and anger, a growth toward being authentic in emotional expressions. Many things have to be considered. One, to be authentic means to be totally factual. Ideologies, theories, isms, they distort you and they give a false persona. You cultivate faces. Then whatsoever you saw, you are not. The reality is missed, and you are simply acting and acting. Rather, your life becomes less alive and more a game, in which you are enacting something, not your real soul, but the culture, the education, the society, the civilization. Man can be cultivated. And the more you are cultivated, the less real. The reality is your uncultivated self, untouched by society. But that is dangerous. A child, if left to himself, will be just an animal. He will be authentic, but he will be an animal. He will not become a man. So that is not possible. That alternative is closed. He cannot leave a child to himself. We have to do something. And whatsoever we do will disturb the real self. It will give clothing. It will give faces and masks to the child. He will become man, but then he will become an actor. He will not be real. If you leave him to himself, he will be like an animal, authentic, real, but not man. So it is a necessary evil. We have to teach him. We have to cultivate and condition him. Then he becomes man, but unreal. The third possibility opens with these techniques of meditation. All techniques of meditation are really unconditionings. Whatsoever society has given to you can be taken again, and then you will not be an animal. Then you will be something more than man. You will be a superman. Real, but not an animal. How it happens? A child has to be given culture, education. There is no possibility to leave him to himself. If we leave him, he will never become a man. He will remain an animal. He will be real, but he will miss the world, the dimension of consciousness which opens with man. So we have to make him a man. He becomes unreal. Why he becomes unreal? Because this man is just imposed from without. Inside he remains the animal. From outside we impose humanity on him. He is divided. He is split in two. Now the animal goes on living within and the man without. That's why whatsoever you do and say is double bind. You have to maintain a face which has given to you. And continuously you have to satisfy your animal also. That creates problems. And every man becomes dishonest. More idealist, more you will have to be dishonest. Because the ideal will say, do this. And the animal will be the quite contrary. He would like to do something else, quite the contrary. Then what one can do? One can deceive others and oneself. Then one can maintain a face, a false face, and go on living the life of the animal. That's what is happening. You live a life of sex, but you never talk about it. You talk about brahmacharya. Your sex life is just pushed into dark. Not only from society, not only from your family, but even from your own conscious mind, you push it in the dark. As if it is not a part of your being. You go on doing things which you are against. Because your biology cannot change just by education. Remember, your inheritance, your biological cells, your structure cannot be changed just by ideological education. No school, no ideology can change your inner animal. Only a scientific technique can change the inner being. Just moral teachings will not help unless you have a scientific technique to change your total inner consciousness. Only then you will not be double. You will become single. The animal is single, unitary. The saint again is single, unitary. Man is double. Because man is just between the two, the animal and the saint. And you can say, between God and dog, man is just in between. Inside he remains the dog. Outside he pretends to be a god. That creates a tension, anguish. And everything becomes false. Either fall down and become an animal, you will be more authentic than man, but then you will miss much. The possibility to become God, you will miss it. The animal cannot become God. Because the animal has no problems to transcend, remember. The animal cannot become God because there is nothing to be transformed. The animal is at ease with himself. There is no problem, no struggle, no transcendence. The animal is not even conscious. He is simply unconsciously authentic. But the animal is authentic. The authenticity is unconscious. No animal can lie. That is impossible. But not because that they maintain immorality. They cannot lie because they are not aware of the possibility that you can be false. They are bound to be true. That truth is not their choice, it is their slavery. An animal is bound to be true, not because he has chosen to be true. Just because he cannot choose the other alternative, there is no alternative for him. He can be himself only, no possibility to be false, because he is unconscious of possibilities. Man is conscious of possibilities. Only man can be untrue. That's a growth. That's evolution. Man can be untrue, that's why man can be true. He can choose. Animals are bound to be true. That's there is slavery, not freedom. If you are true, that's an achievement. Because you could always be untrue. The possibility was open. You have not chosen it. You have chosen the other. It is a conscious choice. Of course, then man will always be in difficulties. Choosing is always difficult. And the mind wants to choose something which is easy to do. Something with the least resistance. Mind wants to choose that. To lie is easy. To be false is easy. To appear loving is easy, to be loving is very difficult. To create a face is easy, to create a being is difficult. So man chooses the simple, the easy, which can be done without any effort and without any sacrifice. With man, freedom comes into existence. Animals are just slaves. With man, freedom comes into existence. Choice comes into existence. Then difficulties, anxiety. With man, the untrue, the false enters. You can deceive. To this point, it is a necessary evil. Man cannot be so simple and pure as animals, but he can be more simple and pure. He can be more impure and more complex. He can be more simple and more pure and more innocent, but he cannot be just like animals. Simple and pure and innocent. That innocence is unconscious. Man has become conscious. Now, he can do two things. Either he may go on with his falsities, with his falseness, and constantly remain a divided being. In conflict with oneself. Or he may become conscious of the whole phenomena, what has happened and what is happening to him. And he may decide not to be false. He may leave all that is false. He may sacrifice. He may choose to sacrifice. Whatsoever can be gained by being false, then he becomes again authentic. But this authenticity is different, qualitatively different, from the authenticity of an animal. He was unconscious. He couldn't do anything. He was just forced by nature to be authentic. Now man decides to be authentic. No one is forcing him. On the contrary, everything is forcing him to be inauthentic. The society, the culture, all that exists around is forcing him to be inauthentic. He decides to be authentic. This decision makes you a self. And this decision gives you a freedom which no animal can attain and no false man can attain. Remember, whenever you lie, deceive, are dishonest, you are forced to do that. That's not your choice, not a real choice. Why you lie? Because of the consequences. Because the society. You will suffer if you say the truth. You lie. And you escape suffering. Really, the society has forced you to lie. It was not your choice. If you say the truth, it is your choice. No one was forcing you to say the truth. Everything was forcing you to say the lie, to be dishonest. That was more convenient, safe, secured. Now you are entering danger, insecurity. But this is your choice. With this choice, for the first time you attain a self. So, animal authenticity is one thing. Man's authenticity is qualitatively different. It is a conscious choice. So a Buddha is one again, like an animal, with only one difference. He is simple, pure, innocent, like an animal, but unlike, because he is conscious. Now everything is a conscious choice. He is alert, aware. This question, that does this mean that Western youth is becoming more authentic? In a sense, yes. It is becoming more authentic because it is falling towards the animal. It is not a choice. Rather, again, it is the easiest course to fall down. The Western youth is more authentic than the Eastern youth in the sense that they are now falling deeper down towards the animal. Eastern youth is false, looks like a facade, not real, phony. But these both are not really the alternatives. The Eastern youth is false, cultured, cultivated, forced to be something which is not real. The Western youth has revolted against it. Revolted towards the authenticity of the animal. That's why sex, violence, they have taken more and more grip of the Western youth. In a way, they are more authentic. But in a way, the greater possibility is the last. A Buddha is also in revolt. A hippie is also in revolt. But the revolts are different. The quality differs. A Buddha is also revolting against the conditioning. But he is going beyond it, towards a unity which is higher than man and higher than animal. You can revolt and go down towards the animal. You are also going towards a unity, but that is going down below man. But in a way, revolt is good, because once revolt comes into the mind, the day is not far off when you will come to understand that this revolt is just going backwards. A revolt is needed which must go forward. So Western youth may come to understand sooner or later that their revolt is good, but the direction is wrong. Then it will become possible in the West to have a new humanity born. In this sense, the Eastern phoniness is not worth anything. It is better to be authentic, to be revolting. Because a revolting mind will not take much time to see that the direction is wrong. But a phony youth may continue for millennia, may not be even aware that there is a possibility to revolt and to go beyond. But nothing is to be worth choosing between the two. The third alternative is the thing. Man must revolt against conditionings and go beyond. If he falls below, then you may have the pleasure of revolting. But the revolt has become destructive. It is not creative. Religion is the deepest revolt. But you may not have thought about it in that way. We take religion as the most orthodox thing, the traditional, the conventional. It is not. Religion is the most revolutionary thing in human consciousness, because it can lead you towards a unity which is higher than animal, higher than man. These techniques are concerned with that revolution. So when Shiva says, be authentic, he means don't be phony. Don't continue to be phony. Be aware about your false persona, about your clothings, dressings, masks, and then be authentic whatsoever you are. Realize it. The real problem is one gets himself deceived by his own deceptions. You talk about compassion. In India, we talk too much about compassion, non-violence. Everyone thinks that he is non-violent. And if you look at him, at his acts, at his relationships, at his gestures, he is violent. But he is not aware that he is violent. He may be violent even in his non-violence. If he is trying to force others to be non-violent, that is violence. If he is forcing himself to be non-violent, that is violence. To be authentic means he must understand and realize what is his real state of mind, not ideas. Not principles, but the state of mind. What is his state of mind? Is he violent? Is he angry? This is what is meant by Seva when he says, be authentic. Know what is your real fact. Because only a fact can be changed. A fiction cannot be changed. If you want to transform yourself, you must know your facticity. You cannot change a fiction. You are violent and you think that you are non-violent. Then there is no possibility of any transformation. Because that non-violence is nowhere. You cannot change it. And the violence is there, but you are not aware of it. So how can you change it? First, know the facts as they are. How to know the facts? Encounter them without your interpretations. That is what is the sutra says, consider. Your servant has come. Consider how you look at your servant. Your boss has come in the room. Consider how you look at your boss. Is the look the same when you look at your servant and when you look at your boss? Are your eyes the same, or is there any difference? If there is any difference, you are a violent man. You don't look at the person, at the man, at the human being. Your look is an interpretation. If he is rich, then you look in a different way. If he is poor, then you look in a different way. Your look becomes economical. You are not looking at the man right before you. You are looking to some bank balance. And if the man is poor, your look has a subtle violence in it, a degrading, insulting look. If the man is rich, you have a subtle appreciation, a welcome, a deep, concern is there always, whatsoever you are doing. Look at your concern. You are angry at your son or at your daughter, and you say you are angry for himself, for his good. Go deep down. Consider it, whether it is true. Your son has been disobedient. You are angry. You say you are to change him because it is for his good. Look within and consider the fact. Is it this fact that you are thinking about his good, or simply you feel insulted because he has disobeyed you? You feel hurt because he has disobeyed you. Your ego is hurt because he has disobeyed you. If your ego is hurt, this is the fact, and you go on pretending that that's not the thing, you are just thinking for his good. That's why you are angry. You are angry just for him. You are not really angry. How can you be angry? You are a loving father. You are not angry at all. How can you be angry? You love him so much. But because he is going on a wrong path, because of your love, you want to change him. That's why you are angry. You are just pretending to help him. But is this the fact? Are you just pretending? Are you feel hurt because he has disobeyed you? And are you so sure that whatsoever you say is right for him? Go down within yourself, look at the fact, consider it, and be authentic. If you are really offended by his disobedience, then know it well that you are offended and you feel hurt. That's why you are angry. This is being authentic. Then you can do much for your change, because facts can be changed, fictions cannot be changed. With everything that you are doing, are you are thinking, go deep down, dig the fact. Don't allow interpretations and words to color it. If this consideration is there, by and by you will become authentic. And this authenticity will not be like an animal. This authenticity will be like a saint. Because the more you know how ugly you are, the more you know how violent you are, the more you penetrate inside your facts and become aware of the nonsense that you are doing, this awareness will help you, and by your ugliness will drop away, will wither away. Because if you are aware of your ugliness, it cannot continue. If you want it to continue, don't be aware about it and create a facet of beauty around it. So you see the beauty and the ugliness is behind, never seen direct. Everyone else will see it. That's the problem. The son will see it, that the father is angry not because of his good. He is angry because he has been disobeyed and he feels hurt. He will know it. You cannot hide your ugliness from others. You can hide it from only yourself. Your look will reveal to everyone that there is violence. You can deceive yourself that there was compassion. That's why everyone thinks himself a very superior being and no one else agrees with him. Your wife doesn't agree with you that you are a superior being. Your children are not in agreement with you that you are a superior being. Your friends, no one agrees with you that you are a superior being. They have a popular saying in Russia that if everyone says his mind totally exactly as it is, there will not be four friends in the whole world. Impossible. Whatsoever your friend thinks about you, he never says to you. That's why friendship continues. But he is saying always behind you. And you are saying what you think about your friend behind him. No one says honestly what he thinks, because then there will be no possibility of any friendship. Why? And no one agrees with you. The reason is only this: you can only deceive yourself, you cannot deceive anyone else. Only self-deception is possible. And when you think you are deceiving others, you are simply deceiving yourself. It may be that others may deceive you that they have been deceived by you. Because there are moments when it is convenient to play the role of being deceived. It may be beneficial for the person. You say to someone about your greatness, Everyone is talking directly, indirectly about his greatness, superiority. Someone may agree with you. If it is beneficial to him, he will deceive you that he is deceived by you. But he knows inside who you are. You cannot deceive anyone unless one is ready to be deceived. That's another thing. By being authentic is meant, remember your facticity. Always find it out from your interpretations, through interpretations, and look at the fact what you are. And don't be afraid. Much ugliness is there. If you are afraid, then you will never be able to change it. If it is there, accept it, it is there, consider it. This is what consideration means, consider it, look at it, in its total nakedness. Move around it, go to its roots, analyze it. See why it is there, how you help it to be it there, how you feed it, how you protect it, how it has grown to be such a big tree. Your ugliness, your violence, your hatred, your anger, how you have protected it, how you have helped it to grow up to now. Look at the roots, look at the whole phenomena. And the Shiva says, if you consider it totally, you can drop it immediately this very moment. Because it is you who have been protecting it. It is you who have been helping it to get rooted in you. It is your creation. You can drop it immediately, just now. You can leave it, and there is no need to look again towards it. But before you can do this, you will have to know it, what it is. The whole mechanism, the whole complexity of it. How you help it every moment. If someone says something insulting to you, how you react. Have you ever thought about it, that he may be right? Then look, he may be right. There is every possibility of him being more right than you about yourself. Because he is aloof, far away, he can observe. So don't react, wait. Tell him that I will consider. You have insulted me, I will consider the fact you may be right. If you are right, then I will give you a thanks. If you are wrong, first let me consider. And if I find that you are wrong, I will inform you. But don't react. Reaction is different. If you insult me and I say to you, wait, come back after 7 days, I will consider whatsoever you have said, you may be right. So I will put myself in your place and will observe myself. I will create a distance. You may be right. So let me look at the fact. You have pointed it. So it is very kind of you. I will look at it. If I feel that you are right, I will thank you. If I feel that you are wrong, I will inform you that you were wrong. Think over it again. But what is the need of reaction? You insult me, what I do? I insult you immediately, then and there. I escape consideration. I have reacted. You insulted me, I have insulted you. And remember, reaction can never be right. Can never be right. You insult me, you create the possibility of my being angry. And when I am angry, I am not conscious. I say something which I had never thought about you. This very moment, because of your insult, I react in a violent way. A moment later, I may repent. Don't react. Consider about facts. And if your consideration is total, you can drop anything. It is in your hands. Because you are clinging to it, it is there. You can drop it immediately. And there will be no suppression, remember. When you have considered a fact, there will be never any suppression. Either you like it, so you continue it. Or you don't like it, you drop it. The second question is concerned according to the last night's technique, when anger, violence, sex, etc. arises, one should consider it and then suddenly quit it. But when one does it, one sometimes feels like being sick and uneasy. What are the reasons for these negative feelings? Only one reason. Your consideration is not total. Everyone wants to quit anger without understanding it. Everyone wants to quit sex without understanding it. And there is no revolution without understanding. You will create more problems and you will create more misery for yourself. Don't think of renouncing anything. Just think of how to understand it. Understanding, not renunciation. There is no need of thinking to quit anything. The only need is to understand it in its totality. If you have understood it in its totality, the transformation will follow. If it is good for you, if it is good for your being, it will grow. If it is bad for you, it will drop. So the real thing is not quitting, it is understanding. Why you think about renouncing anger? Why? Because you have been taught that anger is bad. But have you understood it as bad? Have you come to a personal conclusion? Through your own deepening insight that anger is bad. If you have come to this conclusion through your own insight, there will be no need to quit it. It has already disappeared. The very fact of knowing that this is poisonous is enough. You are a different man. But you go on thinking of leaving, quitting, renouncing. Why? Because people say that anger is bad. And you simply are influenced, whatsoever they say. Then you go on thinking that anger is bad, and when the moment comes, you go on doing anger. You go on being angry. This is how double mind is created. You will remain with anger and you will always think anger is bad. This is inauthenticity. If you think that anger is good, then do it. then don't say anger is bad. Or if you say anger is bad, then try to understand whether this is your realization or someone else has said it to you. Everyone is creating misery around himself because of others. Someone says this is bad, and someone says that is good. And they go on forcing the idea in your mind. The parents are doing, the society is doing, and then one day you are just with others' ideas and your nature and others' ideas. You are split. You will become a schizophrenic. You will do something and you will believe in the very contrary. That will create guilt. Everyone feels guilty. Not that everyone is guilty. Everyone feels guilty because of this mechanism. They say anger is bad. Everyone has said to you anger is bad. And no one has told you how to know what anger is. Everyone says sex is bad. They have been teaching sex is bad. And no one says what sex is and how to know it. Ask your father and he will become uneasy. He will say, don't talk about such bad things. But those bad things are facts. Even your father could not escape, otherwise you would not have been. You are a naked fact. That whatsoever your father says about sex, he couldn't escape it. But he will feel uneasy if you ask, because no one has said him. His parents never told him that why sex is bad. Why? And how to know it? And how to go deep in it? No one will say to you. They will go on labeling things. This is bad and that is good. That labeling creates misery and hell. So one thing remember, for any seeker, a real seeker, this is the basic thing to be understood. Remain with your facts. Try to know them. Don't allow the society to force its ideology on you. Don't look at yourself through others' eyes. You have got eyes. You are not blind. And you have got facts of inner life. Use your eyes. That is what consideration means. And if you consider, then this will not be a problem. But when one does it, one sometimes feels like being sick and uneasy. You will feel. If you have not understood the fact, you will feel uneasy because it is a subtle repression. You know already anger is bad. If I say consider it, you consider only so that it can be renounced. That renouncing is there, always present in your mind. Someone was here, a very old man, 60 years of age, and a very religious man, and not only a religious man, a type of religious leader. He has been teaching many people, and he has written many books. A moralizer. And now, at the age of 60, he comes to me and he says, you are the only person I can say my real problems. How to get rid of sex? And I have heard him speak about brahmacharya. He has written books. And he is torturing his sons and daughters. Because if you want to torture someone, morality is the best trick. The easiest. Because immediately you create guilt in the other person. That is the subtlest torture.
talk about Brahma Sharif and you create guilt. Because it is so difficult to be a Brahmachari, to be a pure celibate. It is so difficult. So when you talk about Brahmacharya and one cannot be, he feels guilty. You have created guilt. Now you can torture. You have made the other man degraded, inferior. Now he will never be at ease. He will have to live sex and he will feel guilty. And he will always try about Brahmacharya and he doesn't know what to do. So his mind will think of Brahmacharya and his body will live with sex. Then he will go against his body. Then he will think that I am not my body. This body is the evil thing. And once you create guilt in someone, you have destroyed. You have destroyed a mind, poisoned it. So the old man came and says, how to get rid of sex? So I told him first to be aware of the fact, and you have missed much opportunity. Now the sex will be weak, and the awareness will need more effort. When sex is violent and the energy is there, sex is young, you can be aware of it very easily. It is so forceful. It is not difficult to see and know and feel it. This man at the age of 60, now feeble, weak, ill, it will be difficult for him to be aware of sex. When he was young, he was thinking about Brahmacharya. He couldn't live that. He has 5 children. Then he was thinking about Brahmacharya and losing the opportunity, and now he is thinking what to do about sex. So I told him to be aware of it. Forget your teachings and burn your books. And don't say anything about sex to anyone unless you know it. Be aware of it. So he said, if I try to be aware, in how many days I will get rid of it? And this is how the mind works. He is ready even to be aware, but just to get rid of. So I told him, if you are not aware of it, who decides to get rid of it? How you conclude that this is bad? This is taken for granted. No need to discover it within yourself. Don't think of renouncing anything. That means you are just being forced by others. Be individual. Don't allow society too much domination over you. Don't be a slave. You have eyes. You have consciousness, you have sex, anger, and other facts. Use your consciousness, use your eyes, be aware of it. Think yourself as if you are alone. No one is there to teach you what you will do. Start from the very beginning, from A, B, C, and go inside. Be totally aware. Don't decide. Don't be in haste. Don't conclude so soon. If you can reach a conclusion through your own awareness, that very conclusion will become a transformation. Then you will not feel any unease. There will be no depression. Only then you can quit anything. I am not saying be aware to quit, remember. I am saying if you are aware, you can quit anything. Don't make awareness as a technique to quit. Quitting is just a consequence. If you are aware, you can quit anything. But you may not decide to quit. There is no necessity. You may not decide to quit. Sex is there. If you will become fully aware of it, you may not decide to quit it. If with full awareness you decide not to quit it, then sex has its own beauty. If with full awareness you decide to quit it, then your renouncement is also beautiful. Try to understand me. Whatsoever is come, whatsoever happens through awareness is beautiful. And whatsoever happens without awareness is ugly. That's why your so-called brahmacharis, celibate monks, are basically ugly. Their whole way of life is ugly. That celibacy has not come as a consequence. That is not their own search. I look at a person, someone like D.H. Lawrence. His sex is beautiful. More beautiful than your celibate monks. Because his sex is with full awareness. Through an insert, he has come to conclude that he is going to live with sex. He has accepted the fact. Now there is no hitch, no guilt. Rather, sex has become glorious. So a D.H. Lawrence, fully aware of his sex, accepting it, living it, has a beauty of its own. A Mahavir, fully aware of the fact, and then coming to conclude to leave it, to quit it, has a beauty of its own. The both are beautiful, D.H. Lawrence and Mahavir. The both are beautiful. But the beauty is not of sex, not of quitting sex. The beauty is of awareness. This must also be remembered constantly. That you may not come to the same conclusion a Buddha comes. There is no necessity. You may not come to the same conclusion a Mahavir comes. There is no inevitability. If there is any inevitability, it is only one, and that is of awareness. Fully aware, whatsoever happens to you is beautiful, is divine. Look at the past sages. Shiva sitting with Parvati. The Parvati is sitting in his left in a deep love gesture. You cannot conceive Mahavir in such a pose. Impossible. You cannot conceive Buddha in such a pose. Just because Rama is pictured with Sita, Jains cannot accept him as avatar, as divine incarnation. Because he is still with woman. That is impossible for Jains to conceive him as an incarnation of God. So they say he is a great man, Mahamanav, but not avatar. He is a great man, but still a man. Because the woman is there. When the woman is there, you cannot go beyond man. The counterpart is there. So you are still a man. Of course a great man, but not beyond man. If you ask Hindus, they have not talked about Mahavir at all. Not even talked, not even mentioned in their books. Because for the Hindu mind, man alone without woman is half, a fragment. It is not the whole. Ram alone is not the whole. So Hindus call Sita Ram, they put woman first and then. They will never call Ram Sita. They will call Sita Ram. They will call Radha Krishna. They will put woman first. For a basic reason. Because man is born out of woman. And man alone is half. With woman he becomes whole. So no Hindu god is alone. The other part, the other half is there. Sita Ram is really the whole. Radha Krishna is the whole. Krishna alone is half. There is no need for Ram to quit Sita. And there is no need for Krishna to quit Radha. Why? They are fully aware. You cannot find a more aware man, a more conscious man than Shiva. But he is sitting with Parvati in his lap. It creates problems. Then who is right? A Buddha is right or a Shiva is right? Problems are created because we don't know that everyone flowers individually. Buddha and Shiva both are fully conscious. But this happens to Buddha. In this full consciousness, he leaves something. That is his choice. This happens to Shiva. In this full consciousness, he accepts everything. They are both at the same point of realization, of awareness, but their expression will be different. So don't fall into any pattern. No one knows what will happen when you become aware. So don't decide before becoming aware that I am going to quit this and that. Don't decide. No one knows. Wait. Be aware. And let your being flower. No one knows what will happen. With everyone there is an unknown possibility of flowering. And you need not follow anyone. Because every following is dangerous, destructive. Every imitation is suicide. Wait. So these techniques are only to make you aware. And when you are aware, you can quit anything or you can accept anything. When you are not aware, remember what is happening. You neither can accept nor you can quit. You have sex. Neither you can accept it totally and forget. No, you cannot accept it. Neither you can quit it. I say either accept it and forget or quit it and forget. But you cannot do any of the two. You will always be doing both. You will accept and then you will think of quitting it. And this is a vicious circle. When you have sex, then for few hours or few days, you will think of quitting it. Really, you are regaining energy and nothing else. When you have regained energy, you will again think of having it. And this will go on for your whole life. It has been for so many lives. When you become fully aware, you can decide. Either you accept it, then that acceptance gives a beauty. Or you quit it, then that quitting is also beautiful. One thing is certain, when you are aware, you can forget it, either way. It is not a problem then. Your decision is total and the problem drops. But if you feel any uneasiness, it means you have not considered, you have not been aware. So be more aware, consider any fact more deeply, more individually, without the conclusions of others. The third question, when impulse is authentic, I am unaware, how can I exercise stop? This is a very significant question. It is easy to stop anything when you are false. It is difficult to stop anything when you are authentic. When the anger is real, you will forget about the technique of stop. When the anger is false, you will remember, you can do it. But when the anger is false, there is no meaning. There is no energy. You can stop it, it is useless. When the anger is real, only then the energy is there. And if you stop it, the energy will take an inner turn. So what to do? Try to be aware, not of anger directly, but of easier things. You are walking, be aware of it. Don't start with anger. Start with easier things. You are walking. Be aware of it. There is no problem. And suddenly stop your walk. Start with easy things. Anger is a deep, complex thing. Don't start with complex things. Don't jump on sex immediately. It is more subtle and you will need more deep awareness for it. So first create awareness with easier things. And only then you are walking, you are taking a bath, you feel thirsty, you feel hungry. Start with these things. Are very ordinary things. You were just going to speak something to someone. Stop. Even in the middle of the sentence. You were going to relate a story you have been relating 1,000 times and you have bored everyone with it. You were again starting. Once there was a king. Stop. With easy things. Start with easy things. There is a fly on your head. You were just going to throw it away by your hand. Stop. Let the fly be there. Let your hand remain stopped. Do with easy things. So you have the feeling, the feel of stopping. And awareness, then move to complex things. Anger is a very complex thing. easy mechanical things. Every day in the morning, you step out of your bed. Have you observed? You step every day in the same way. If your right feet comes first, it comes first always. Tomorrow morning, when the right feet is coming out, stop and let the left feet come. Do with easier things, nothing to sacrifice. Just a habit. Always you start your walk with the right feet first. Stop. Anything can be used. Find out. Easier, the better. And when you become a master of easier things, and you can stop suddenly, and can have the feel of awareness, a sudden calmness comes to you. An inner silence explodes for a second. Gurdjieff used to train his disciples in very easy things. For example, you say something, you nod your head. So he will train him, say the same thing but don't nod the head. It is a mechanical habit. I'm saying something, I make a gesture by my hand. Gurdjieff will say, don't make this gesture when you say this thing. Remember this. Make any other gesture. But remember only this. Then when you are saying this, don't make this gesture. Be aware of it. So use anything. You always start your conversation with a particular sentence. Don't start with it. Someone says something, you have a mechanical response. Don't respond that way. Say something else. Or if you have started saying the old thing, stop in the middle. Stop with a jerk, suddenness. Try this. And only then, when you feel a mastery, move to complex things. This is one of the basic tricks of the mind, that it will always say to you, jump to a complex thing. And then you are a failure. Then you will never try again. You know that it cannot be done. This is a trick of the mind. The mind will say, okay, now you know the exercise of a stop. When you are angry, heart angry, stop. You will be a failure. Then you will not try again. Try with cold things. Don't move to the heart. And when you can do cold things, then move to the heart. With gradual steps, feel the path and don't be hasty. Otherwise, nothing will be accomplished. The last question. After hearing about so many meditation techniques in Vigyan Bhairavatantra, I am beginning to feel that the inner door cannot really open by techniques, but that it really depends on things like initiation, grace of Guru, etc. Is not that really the case? And when and how can one become capable of receiving initiation? Really, grace of Guru is again a technique.
just by changing the words, nothing changes. It means surrender. You can receive the grace of the Guru only when you surrender. And surrender is a technique. If you don't know how to surrender, you will not receive any grace. So really, grace is not given, it is received. No one can give grace. You can receive it. With an enlightened person, the grace is flowing always. It is there. It is just his nature. Just as a lamp is burning and the light is radiating. The enlightened person is always radiating grace. That is not any effort. It is flowing effortlessly. It is there. If you can receive, you can receive. If you cannot receive, you cannot receive. So it may look paradoxical if I say, but it is the truth. The grace is not given by the Guru. It is received by the disciple. But how to be a disciple, then again, it is a technique. How to surrender. How to become receptive. And surrendering is the most difficult of things. You cannot surrender your anger. You cannot surrender your sadness. How can you surrender your total being? You cannot surrender nonsense things. You cannot surrender your diseases. How can you surrender yourself? Surrendering means surrendering totally. You leave totally to your teacher, to your master. You say, now I am no more. Now you are. Do whatsoever you like. And then you don't wait. And then you don't again go on asking when you are going to do. You have surrendered. You are finished. There is nothing to be asked anymore. In the right moment, the thing will happen. But how to do it? This also will need a very great awareness. Ordinarily, stupid people think that surrender is very easy. That is stupidity. Because they think that if you go and touch the feet of a teacher, you have surrendered. Even touching the feet can be a surrender. But don't think that because you have touched the feet, you have surrendered. Surrendering is an inner attitude. Putting yourself off. Forgetting yourself completely. Only the master remains. You are no more. Only the master is. This can be done only with a very deep awareness. What is that awareness? If you go on doing these techniques, if you go on doing these techniques, and you feel continuously that you are helpless, but don't decide your helplessness before doing them. It will be false. First do them, and do them authentically. If the techniques happen to help you, there will be no need of surrender. You will be transformed. If you do authentically, really, fully, you are not deceiving yourself, and nothing happens, then you will feel helplessness, that I cannot do. If this goes deep in you, this feeling of helplessness, only then you will be capable of surrendering, not before it.
Do you feel helpless? No one feels helpless. No one feels helpless. Everyone knows I can do. If I want, I can do. Because I don't want, I'm not doing it. Everyone thinks that if I wish, I will do. The moment I will, I will do. Only it is I'm not willing just now. But no one feels helpless. But if someone says that through the grace of the Guru it can happen, you are just this very moment ready. If it is a question of doing something, you say we can do it whenever we want. But if it is a question of grace, you are just now, you say, okay, if it can be received from someone, I can receive it this very moment. You are not helpless. You are just lazy. And there is a great difference. In laziness, no grace can be received. Only in helplessness. And helplessness is not part of laziness. Helplessness comes only to them who make every effort first to reach, to penetrate, to do. When you have done everything and nothing happens, you feel helpless. Only then you can surrender to someone. Then your surrendering will become a technique. That is the last of techniques. But people try it first. That is the last, the ultimate. When nothing can do, when nothing happens by doing, only helplessness and helplessness and helplessness. And you lose all hope. Your ego is shattered. You know now that alone, nothing can be done. Then your hand reaches to the feet of a master. It is a different type of reach. You are helplessly searching him. Your whole being moves to his feet. You become just a womb to receive. Then the grace is available. It has never been unavailable. It is always available. In every age, in every period, there are enlightened persons. But unless you are ready to lose yourself, you will not be in contact with them. You may be just sitting behind, just sitting by the side of them, but there will be no contact. There are three types of distances. One distance is of space. You are sitting there, I am sitting here, and there is a space between the two points. This distance in space, you can come near. The distance will be less. You can just touch me, and the distance is the last, but only in space. There is a second type of distance in time. Your beloved has died, your friend has died. In a space, the one point has disappeared completely. Infinite distance. But in time, you can feel your friend just nearby. You close your eyes and the friend is there. It may be the person who is sitting by your side is more distant than your beloved, who is no more in the world, in time. But there is a third type of distance, and that is of love. The beloved is dead, then by and by, there will be a greater distance of time. People say time heals. When the time is very, very, very distant, the memory becomes more and more faint and disappears. A third distance exists, a third dimension, which is love. If you are in love with someone, then he may be on another star. But in love, he is just near you. He may have died, there may be centuries of distance between you and him, but in love there is no distance. Someone can be near Buddha just now. 25 centuries mean nothing, because the distance is of love. In space, there is no Buddha now. The body has disappeared. In time, 2,500 years distance. But in love, no distance. If someone is in love with Buddha, time and space distances disappear. He is just here, and you can receive his grace. You may be just sitting by the side of a Buddha. There is no gap as far as space is concerned. There is no distance as far as time is concerned. But there is no love. Then there is infinite distance. So someone may have lived with Buddha without being in contact. Someone may be just here now who is in contact with Buddha. Grace happens in the dimension of love. For love, everything is always eternally present. So if you are in love, grace can happen. But love is surrendering. Love means now the other has become more important than yourself. Now, for other's life, you are ready to die. If the other lives, you can sacrifice yourself. The other has become the center. You are just the periphery. By and by, you disappear completely and the other remains. In that ripe moment, grace is received. So don't think of a master who can give you grace. Think of becoming a helpless disciple, totally surrendered, in love. The master will come to you. When the disciple is ready, the master always comes. It is not a question of physical presence. When you are ready, from an unknown dimension of love, grace happens. But don't think about grace as an escape. Because I am talking about so many techniques, I know. There are two possibilities. You may try some, or you may just become confused. The other is more possible. 112 techniques, listening one another continuously, you will become confused. You will think, it is beyond me. So many techniques. So what to do and what not to do? This may come to your mind that it is better to receive grace, Guru Kripa, than to go in this jungle-like world of techniques. It is very complex. So it is easy to receive the grace. But that will not happen to you if this is the way of your thinking. Try these techniques. And try honestly. If you are a failure, then that very failure will become your surrender. That's the ultimate technique. Okay.